We're going to talk today about after the Beatitudes, starting in Matthew chapter 5, starting perhaps about the 21st verse, and we'll see what we can find there. We're going to want to look at Matthew 5, verses 21 to 24 initially. And, okay, I think I'll go ahead and read those scriptures. 21 to 24. Ye have heard that it was said to them of old time, Thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever saith unto his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council, and whosoever shall say, Thou fool, that's not strong enough, shall be in danger of the Gehenna of fire. I think the first thing we might want to look at there, we'll go to slide number 2 now. That'll be the next slide. Yes, whoops, that went just past the one we want, how to regard a brother in Christ. This goes from bad to worse, really. It's not saying simply that whosoever shall be angry with his brother, somebody has a temporary flare-up, and in 60 seconds he gets control of himself. But the meaning here is a little deeper than that. It's not just being angry, but harboring that anger. To harbor a grudge against my brother. Let's see how I can get back at him for what he's done to me. Now, have you ever felt in your mind about a brother is saying something stupid or doing something stupid? And this is the thought of Raca, like as if you were to say, you moron, you stupid idiot. So the first one, harboring a grudge, you're in danger of the court. But now if I go to the point where I'm saying, brother, you're stupid. You don't know what you're doing. Then now I am in danger of the appellate court. But now what they translate as thou fool is not strong enough. It really means you willfully wicked one, you villain. So if I go to that extent, now I'm going to have to appeal to the Supreme Court to avoid the Gehenna of fire. That's like saying the second death, isn't it? Now, if we go further, verse 23, if therefore thou art offering thy gift at the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar. Go thy way and first be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. Might we ever be tempted to think, well, you know, I don't want to take time out to see what I can do to reconcile my brother because I might miss something in the public witness opportunity or might miss something in being able to help the other brethren over there. But can I really offer to God anything so great that he will overlook making things right? Or in plain English, can I bribe God? Now, I will admit, I have not always been successful. On one occasion that I think of, I tried very hard to see if we couldn't arrange something. And it never got arranged until he died. I regret that it didn't happen. But we should endeavor to be at least in harmony with our brethren, if not in harmony, to at least put up with one another. Or, as some have put it, you can swallow your pride. It's non-fattening. We'll go down to the next slide. So, we need to think right, and we need to do right. We need to do both. I'll read first verses 27 and 8. You have heard that it was said, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that everyone that looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Now, this thought of looking on a woman, thinking, you know, if you just put that idea out of your head, you won't have to worry about doing it. But people meditate on it and they do wrong things. And this needn't be limited to desiring adultery. There are related things like pornography. Do we think that that's only a problem of the atheists and agnostics or of the Roman Catholic Church? It's a problem in Protestantism. It's a problem in the big mega churches. It's a problem in at least some of their smaller churches as well. And yes, it is a problem among a good many Bible students, which it should not be. Let's dismiss from our minds at the first moment all thoughts of pornography or fantasies. If you don't think about it, it's not a problem. The more you think about it, the more of a problem it is. So the only thing to do is, when Satan puts a thought into your head, dismiss it out the other side right away. As one sister used to say, you can't keep the birds from circling overhead, but you can sure keep them from nesting in your hair. Now, verses 29 and 30 are not unrelated to these other verses before and after. They are like a conjunction between them. And if thy right eye causeth thee to stumble, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into Gehenna. If you had inoperable cancer in your left eye, wouldn't you want to have the left eye removed so that the whole body doesn't go with it? And then in verse 30, and if thy right hand causeth thee to stumble, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for them that one member should perish and not the whole body go into Gehenna. Now, the first case is the eye. That's what verses 27 and 8 we're just talking about. But now, the second part of this is the hand that's doing it. Don't just think it, but do it. And the example that's given is really the meaning that I want this new model, but I'm married, can't have her. Oh, wait a minute. I know how to do it and get around the law. I'll divorce my first wife so I can go ahead and marry her. So it says, it was said also, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. Okay. But I say unto you that everyone that putteth away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, maketh her an adulteress. And whosoever shall marry her when she is put away committeth adultery. There's a little bit of problem with the translation there, the tense of it. That the actual literal translation is, everyone that putteth away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, maketh her to have committed adultery. I say that doesn't make sense. How could he make her to have retroactively committed adultery? So the thought is intended in the Hebrew, and that is that whosoever putteth his wife away causeth her to be deemed to have committed adultery, because it creates a suspicion in people's mind as to why you divorced her. And similarly, that's the thought with whosoever marrieth her shall be deemed to have committed adultery. So what's saying here is the one that does the divorcing here is the one who is guilty of a sin. He's causing the wife to have been suspected of having committed adultery. Okay, I think we'll go on to the next slide now. Am I in the truth? Well, I've got to tell only the truth. The question really isn't so much, am I in the truth, but is the truth in me? Now in the world, especially in the Muslim world, unless the statement is repeated over and over again, in Muslim world, it's not believed until it's repeated three or even four times. So, our word should mean what it says every time we say it. That brings up the question, is it wrong for me to swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in a court of law? Well, I've thought about that many times. Our word should be such that whether we are sworn to tell the truth or not, we tell only the truth. I think if the court says, yes, you must swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, I can explain at the beginning that whether I'm sworn to do it or not, I will tell the truth, the whole truth, or nothing but the truth. But to please the court, I will also swear to do so. Others may have a conscience against doing that, and that is acceptable as well. Let it be explained. The essence of what's being said here in verses 33 to 37 is, let your yes mean yes, and let your no mean no, because anything more than that is of Satan himself. And I thought, is there a way to illustrate how we should do so? And I thought of one that's relatively current here in the last 5 years. And that is the Center for Communicable Disease Control and Prevention says that the vaccine is safe and effective. And other people in the media, almost all of the media says the same thing. And then there are other people, doctors and others, who say, I've seen cases, too many cases, where they've been permanently damaged or killed. And so that has brought me to looking at the CDC data. By law, the CDC is required to gather VAERS data, meaning Vaccine Adverse Effects Reporting System. Now, I haven't seen that they report on what the data is, but people are supposed to be able to access to it. They'd have to have an enormous computer to do that. Now, one fellow has done it, at least. And so when I was able to get access to the data on varsanalysis.info, I did so. And so doing what I'm able to do from the types of work that I've done over the years, I'll explain what this is. It's taking the time from the jab. This is from day one out to day 76. Actually, starts with day zero. And that wiggly red line that you see is the number of deaths per day that have been recorded up through, I think it is, December 30th of 2022. So that's about 2 years. And as you can see, that there is no simple equation that will do all of that. However, you can do it with a summation of three lines. It turns out that there are two exponentials, one fast and one slow, and the third one is a horizontal line. Well, when you see that's a horizontal line, you can know immediately It has nothing to do with the vax itself. And that represents 14.4% of the total deaths. Okay, so you have to subtract that from the VAERS system. It wouldn't be fair to include that which has nothing to do with the vax. Then of these exponential decay lines, there's one that starts out the largest, but it decays quickly. And so it's actually that long stretched out line that is fast. The mean time for the fast line is 1.8 days. For the slow line, I think is 16 days. Essentially, it's 2 days versus 2 weeks, approximately. Now, on the left, you see the number of deaths. Really, it's deaths per day. And it goes from the bottom line is 1, then 10, then 100, then 1,000. Now, none of it approaches 10,000 here. But you can put together the sum total of this integrating under the two lines. And the slow line accounts for 12,200 deaths. It's about 78% of the total. Now, I'm not a doctor, not a nurse, but they do say that a good portion of the deaths that are observed are from myocarditis and pericarditis, which is a problem in the blood itself. So my guess would be that the long line is associated with things like the myocarditis and the pericarditis. Now, the CDC also says that what they show on the vax, on the VAERS system, rather, is a great underestimate what it is for the total for the United States. So Dr. Jessica Rose has just recently said that she's analyzed the data and the underreporting factor is 31. So you can sort of decide. I'll let you do your own analysis of that and decide what you think. So we'll go on now to the next slide. Now, in Matthew 5, 38 to 42, I'll just begin the reading of that. Ye have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, resist not him that is evil, but whosoever smiteth thee on the right cheek, turn to him the left also. Sometimes I think we tend to misunderstand what it's saying when the law says an eye for an eye. Now, somebody who gets hurt, let's say somebody puts out his eye. He is not required to say, I want his eye put out. So what the law is saying is, no more than an eye for an eye. It's not to be two eyes for an eye or a mouth full of teeth for a tooth. We go on to verse 40 here. And if any man would go to law with thee and take away thy coat or thy jacket, let him have thy cloak also or thy vest also. And a brother some years ago pointed out, without the jacket, what good is the vest? So if he takes away your jacket, let him have the vest as well. Don't try to give him only the minimum. Now, in my younger days, especially my school days, when there wasn't much money extra, question is it wrong for me to give of the Lord's money to the poor? But as we see in Luke 6:35 and forward, it's love your enemies and do them good and lend, never despairing. And let your reward, and your reward shall be great, and ye shall be sons of the Most High. And Jesus said, the poor ye have always with you. Now, it doesn't mean that I need to go without food for a week or a month in order that somebody else gets to eat each day. But to the extent that I reasonably can, it is only honorable to be respectful of the poor, because the poor you have always with you. But not only the poor, have love for your enemies and do them good and lend never despairing. After all, did we not also have time when we were on the outside? When we were enemies, Christ died for us? So let's remember to be merciful to others. Okay, and not require a full measure, everything that we can get from others. So now I think that we can go to the next slide. Love your enemies. Why and how? And start with verse 43. Ye have heard that it was said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and rain on the just and on the unjust. Do we remember somebody named Stephen who prayed for his enemy? And it was a good thing for the whole church, because Saul of Tarsus himself, willingly a murderer, instead was converted. Imagine how that made other would-be murderers feel to find that their champion has now gone over to the other side. Yes, even pray for them that persecute you. So, remember that when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of his Son. That's Romans 5:10. So, if thine enemy be hungry, give him bread to eat, for thou wilt heap coals of fire on his head. Now, if you want to be kind to someone, do you want to put coals of fire on his head? Various explanations have been given to that. One that seems to me to make good sense is that it's on his conscience. You're putting things on his conscience. And who knows? His conscience may eventually turn him around. And why do we think that it might be a good idea, even if he doesn't turn himself around? So, think about that fellow when he is resurrected in the kingdom. How is he going to view you? How is he going to view me? Do we want him to be resurrected? Hear that we are part of the heavenly kingdom? Is he going to react in fear or in gratitude? So there's a good reason for showing and demonstrating kindness even to our enemies. And I think we can go to the next slide. We are running a little low on time, so I will not take a great deal of time with it. But this has to do with our Lord's Prayer. See, that'll be the next slide when it's convenient. Our first thought should be to our God, hallowed be thy name. That should be our number one thought. Thy kingdom come. That's what we're told to pray for. Is it the millennium? Maybe not just stopping at the millennium, because the millennium itself is to be a remedial period for the world. But thy kingdom come, God's kingdom will in the fullest sense come only when the final exam has been passed at the end of the millennium, and then the world emerges into the perfect days of eternity. We ask for our bread for the coming day. When there is no gratitude, there is also no joy, no happiness. And forgive. King James may say, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. But really, let's get the tense correct. Forgive us our trespasses as we have forgiven those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Now, that evil one, a Greek brother says, is called in the Greek pony ropes. He's not the one that does the dirt. He's the one that whispers in your ear and gets you to do his dirty work for him, and he goes and hides. An apt description of Satan. Question is it an apt description of me? I certainly hope not. I don't want it to be, and I've got to work to be sure that it isn't. Now, time running short here. We are to be founded on a rock. The next slide, please. History of our own time here. Going back earlier in the harvest, in Brother Russell's time, the message was to go out as far and as wide as possible. And that's why not only the call porters were sent out, but also the photodrama was created. And it did a remarkable job up through 1914. And then, of course, after 1914 and 15 and 16, the work was necessarily decreased because of the war. And after Brother Russell died, the Pastoral Bible Institute was begun in 1918. And that's purpose was to regather the brethren who were coming out of Babylon number two, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins. It was a means and not the end in itself. Now, a little over a decade later, the Dawn was begun to restart the public witness work and started with a great energy. That was in the 1931-1932 era. I think actually they started the programs for about 3 months back as early as 1929. But again, the Dawn was a means, not the end in itself. And the same is true of our ecclesias, committees, whatever you think of to do a particular part of the work. And we remember what the end is itself, or who the end is itself. And the rock was Christ. So we'll go now to the last slide. So, what should be our priorities? One priority should be self-control. You know, temper is an awful thing. It's bad to have a temper, and it's worse to lose it. Again, the question is not, am I in the truth, but is the truth in me? And a third one, do good unto all men, even to our enemies.